it's time for a story. I mentioned about the covering of the toe. And it's been a part of the Mevlevi tradition for many centuries now, and also other orders actually have included this within their bowing. And it goes back to Mevlana's dear friend, Ateshbazvili, who was Mevlana's cook, the cook of the Durga. And actually within the Mevlevi tradition, much of the teaching goes on in the kitchen. And when a person first comes to the teke to ask to become a dervish, they first come to the kitchen and are asked to just sit in a corner for 3 days. So there's actually a little place where there's a little sheepskin or gazelle skin. If you go to Konya, you'll see, you know, there's this little platform where the hopeful dervish would sit for 3 days and just observe. And at the end of the 3 days, he would be asked again, you know, are you sure you want to do this? So there were many aspects to the training, and that included things like grinding the coffee, serving the coffee, going to the market to shop for the coffee, cleaning the toilets. That's an important one. And that was one of the higher stages. And it was the one who was the head cook was actually one of the higher teachers within the teke, because there was that understanding that this journey, this of spirit, is really a cooking of souls. So Ateshbaz, which means the one who plays with fire, was the cook in those days. And he had been preparing some food, and Mevlana was away for a bit, and Ateshbaz was cooking, and he realized that he was going to run out of wood for the fire before the dish was finished being cooked. And so in that moment, he put his foot in the fire to continue the fueling of the fire so that the meal would be cooked. And he witnessed that his foot was there, the fire was still cooking the meal, but his foot wasn't being burned. And then for a moment, he doubted that that was possible. So in that moment of doubt, his big left toe was singed. So when Mevlana came back, Ateshbaz stood covered that toe. So ever since then, we also cover that toe. It's in recognition of our moments of doubt, you know, and yet that beauty in which we're held even within that doubt. Another moment that we remember Ateshbaz is at the end of a meal. You know, you all just shared a meal here together, and there's awareness carried through the meal, often in silence. And then at the end of the meal, the blessing comes. And the blessing that is often said is, we are the Sufis of the road. We are those who are journeying. And we dine at the table of our King. May this friendship and this nourishment continue eternally. By the breath of Mevlana, by the secret of Shems and Weled, that's the son of Mevlana, and by the graceful cooking of Hatesh Bazdali, we say hu, hu. So that's the grace that's often said at the end of a meal. There are these prayers, you know, that we're given in the traditions that we have that come to us as a way of, you know, just voicing something. And there are many within the Mevlevi tradition that are, you know, with the beginnings and ends of things, especially the ends of things. And they're called rose prayers, the gulbank. And just opening for that, all the goodness of what we have experienced to be with us, and any harm to be dispelled, and in remembrance, and with it often ends with this, by the breath of Mevlana. And it's interesting that in Turkish also the word breath and moment are the same. So they often say, you know, moment by moment, dem bu dem, you know, by this breath, breath by breath, moment by moment. So we have all these ways in which we are held in remembrance. And if we come back to this poem, towards the end, we have this verse, and when he journeyed to heaven on the night of Miraj, he was brought close to God, two bow lengths or nearer. This refers to the moment when the Prophet Muhammad went on a night journey into the heavens, into the presence of God. And it's said that he rode on this winged creature, Barak, and Gabriel accompanied him until he came so close into that presence that even Gabriel said, I cannot go closer or I will be burned. You know, it's just only that pure presence can meet pure presence, even without the messenger of Gabriel, just the soul with its Lord. Shems, in his conversations, tells a story about someone who had a dream, and he dreamed that he should go out and stand in the graveyard with the dome behind him, and put the arrow to the bow, and pull the arrow. Where the arrow fell, there would be a treasure. So he went out, and he stood, and he pulled the bow, and he let the arrow go, and it flew, and he went, and he dug, and couldn't find anything. He tried again, you know, and he pulled it really hard this time, let it fly. The arrow landed, he went and he dug, couldn't find anything. So he did this a while, and then people started to, you know, wonder, see him and wonder what's going on here. And word got around, and people were whispering about some treasure, you know, that was to be found. And the Sultan got wind of this, and he sent his prime archers, thinking, maybe they will find the treasure. And they went, and they pulled the bow very far, and let the arrow go, went flying. They went, they dug, nothing. So finally, everybody just gave up and went home. And this man went to sleep again. And then he heard a voice. We said to fit the arrow to the bow and let it go, but we didn't say to pull it. So he went out, he stood, let the arrow go, and it fell at his feet. So this moment of stepping into the presence of God, you know, sometimes we make so many efforts, and yet that treasure is right within us. So this mirage, this journey through the heavens, you know, we make efforts and efforts, and yet in a moment, God himself, herself, with that overwhelming grace, grants that presence. So it's said in the tradition that the following of Muhammad is also following him in this mirage into the presence of God. And he spoke of this, and also Mevlana speaks about it beautifully in the Masnavi, that, you know, it may happen differently for different people, and not to think any less of Jonah, for instance, whose mirage, whose journey was deep into the belly of a whale, you know, as different as that was from Muhammad's journey through the heavens into the presence of God, that each soul has its journey, and that with the beloved there is no outer direction. There is only that inwardness, that intimacy. So may we move more and more towards God's disposition. And even though Mevlana says here, depart from your own disposition, there is the understanding in Islam that one is born with that purity. There is the term fitra, the innate nature of the soul is in that purity. But as we move into this world, we, you know, become heavy sometimes with conditioning and the pull of the world can be very strong until we learn what that's really pulling us towards, that through all of it, there is the presence of the divine. So that there is this verse in the Quran, wherever you turn, there is the face of God. And this is at the center of the dervish who is whirling, you know, that no matter where you are, still there is that presence, that stillness, that face of God always with you. So let's move to these seven counsels of Mevlana. In generosity and helping others, be like a river. In compassion and grace, be like the sun. in concealing others' faults, be like the night. In anger and fury, be as if you have died. In modesty and humility, be like the earth. In tolerance, be like the sea. Appear as you are, or be as you appear. Sometimes it's spoken of that, you know, we tend to be many colored in our actions, in our movements, but if we can come to that place of one coloredness, Mevlana expresses it beautifully when he says, you know, being dyed with the color of who placed in that dyeing vat. And then myriad rainbows can come out of that if the core of it is that oneness.